Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise? The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. See WWE.net.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well,
to
do play it then. Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Second half just underway at Anfield, 2-1 Liverpool. It's been a really good response after Arsenal took a goal against the run of play. Lacazette on 25 minutes. Mane then equalised on 28. Robertson on 34 put Liverpool 2-1 up. Second half has just started. Some of the stats. Liverpool, 11 efforts on goal to Arsenal's 1. They've had 70% possession to Arsenal's 30. And in the final third, Liverpool have had 59 successful passes. Arsenal have had 5. So that's been the general situation thus far. Earlier on today, Fulham 0, Aston Villa 3. That is Fulham 0 points for 3 games. Jack Grealish scored after 4 minutes. Conor Herrin scored after 15. He was good by all accounts. And then Tyrone Mings put Aston Villa 3-0 up after 48 minutes. And that was that. Pat Nevin, good evening.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing? Are you well?
I'm very well. So I understand you've been watching the first half there at Anfield. I haven't really been able to watch this game, been busy presenting this old radio thingy. But the stats I read out look fairly damning.
Yeah, you must be looking at it because I'm watching you on the web here and all I've got is a side view of you. So, there you are.
There I am.
You've turned around as well.
Okay.
It's, to be honest, utter dominance by Liverpool. Boy, they look hungry for it. They've closed down. They've been like, certainly a Liverpool of maybe a year, 2 years ago. You know, really high energy, given no space whatsoever to Arsenal. And it is a bit of a travesty. It was a travesty when Arsenal got that goal, as you say. Only one shot on target, and it was a complete and utter miss hit at that. That would have been a travesty had they not gone in at half-time 2-1 up, and they have gone in. And they look really good value for it. We'll see if Arsenal can change that in the second half.
And have Arsenal come out with a limited enough game plan, Pat, or is it just they've had very little say in the matter because Liverpool have been that good and dictated things?
It's an interesting thing. I mean, they've got enough players up front there. They've got Aubameyang, they've got Lacazette, they've got Willian. You know, they've got enough attack-minded players, but those players have hardly had a kick of the ball. Just basically chasing back most of the time. So that whole midfield area, totally dominated by Liverpool, the energy. But you say that, it helps when your front three work as hard as the Liverpool front three have been working. They've been fantastic in this, and it's they actually have been a joy to watch on this occasion. And each time they break, they look as if they're capable of scoring a goal just because of the quality that they've got.
Every indication is that this team is as hungry as ever now and ready to go again, and work rate is up. And there is, it seems, not least based on what happened at the Etihad yesterday, very little hope for anyone else just at this point in time.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because you watched Liverpool at the end of last season, and it's whether they got the brawlies, the holiday towels out far too early, but they lost a lot of goals. They didn't look as hungry, but maybe they just knew they needed to conserve some energy because there is no sign of that whatsoever at the start of the season. I mean, they absolutely dominated Chelsea. I mean, it was 2-0. Should be much more than that against Chelsea as well. And considering Arsenal have, you know, played them twice in the last month or two, and Arsenal have won both of those games, it's as if Liverpool have come out and said, right, okay, game time now, we're up for it. And they look great. They look absolutely fantastic at the moment. And it is worrying concerning for everyone else, because you look at Manchester City, and even though they had 72% of possession in their game against Leicester, you know, losing those 5 goals. Here's an interesting thing for you. So up until tonight's game, six of the games were kind of one-sided in terms of possession in the Premier League, as in get more than 60% of the possession. And of those six games where you had more than that possession, only one of the teams won. The rest of them either got drawn or got beat. So that old phrase they used to say where possession is 9/10 of the law, I'm not convinced that's the case now in the Premier League. There's so many teams that are actually very good at playing on the break at the moment. By the way, the only team that won having more than 60% possession up until tonight was Leeds United.
Right, okay. And was possession generally king, you know, back when you were playing?
Well, generally, yeah, to some degree. But I think it got more the case, you know, when I think the attitude towards it changed with Barca. I think Barcelona changed everything. Used to, if you get 85% of the ball, then you've only got 15% of the time to score a goal. It wasn't complicated, the concept of it. The concept is if you ain't get the ball, you ain't going to score. But teams have become a bit more sophisticated, understood that, okay, then you can have possession, but we will decide where you have it. So it is one of those stats that sounds great. Oh, you had all the possession. I don't care about that. It's where you had the possession is the important part. I mean, you can have 70% possession if you're passing between your centre-backs and your deep-line midfielder. Kind of, so what? Who cares? And that's what a lot of the Premier League teams are playing on just now, and playing very well on it, really working hard with intelligent attackers, but lightning-quick attackers as well.
Mm. How worrying are the signs at City now?
Yeah, I'm worrying for me in the fact that we got asked at the start of the season who you thought would be the top four. And like everyone else, I say, well, Liverpool, Manchester City, and we don't know which will be which. Well, I'm pretty sure one of them's going to be Liverpool, but I'm not sure the other one's going to be Man City now.
Right.
They still got great players. But there are just so many problems there. When you looked at the mess of their defence in that game against Leicester, it just looks as if they haven't been formally introduced. All the players are all over the place. There was a number of other reasons for it as well. There was one particular, I think it was the fourth or the fifth goal, where I think Nathan Ake got a bit of abuse because he went in to mark his player. Thing is, nobody marks the runners, so he had two or three to mark, so I don't think it was his problem at all. Thing is, if you're playing with sitting midfielders or defensive midfielders, you've got to mark your runners, you've got to follow them. They just didn't seem to do that. They're just always looking forward, never looking back. And if your two fullbacks are going forward all the time as well, there's going to be gaps there. Everyone keeps on telling me that the new tactics are phenomenal and everything's much more sophisticated. Hey, that's pretty basic stuff, and that's stuff you should always know.
It's hard to get a read on where Pep is as well, you know, how invested and enthusiastic he is about the whole thing. This is obviously his first time in a fifth season. We'd Mark Lawrenson on earlier in the show previewing the Liverpool game, and he said he saw an interview with Pep over the weekend where he felt he looked, you know, downcast, and, you know, he's lost his mother in the last couple of months, and it was almost philosophical about the possibility of losing his job. Not something you suspect Pep would have even, you know, been anywhere close to having a perspective on a year or two into the City project. And you just wonder, I mean, and what, €400 million spent on defenders in 5 years, and he's been there for four full years, and this was kind of the culmination yesterday. We're judging from afar, but you just wonder if the air has gone out of the whole thing.
You do actually wonder that. I mean, it's early in the season. Remember, this looked weird for a lot of teams this season. You have to judge them by Liverpool. You have to judge them by that, because that's where they are to be judged.
And by the continuation of last year's team and the way they went out to Lyon.
Yes, and I'm not actually making any excuses for them, and I wouldn't make any excuses for them. But, you know, if you've not got the natural goal scorer of Aguero, you're now missing, you know, David Silva. You know, you've got to ask, is what they're replacing them with going to be good enough? Now you've got Foden, you've always got De Bruyne there as well. But you're going to have to try and get the best out of them all the time. And whereas you look at Liverpool, and they seem to get the best out of their front three just about all the time. And you look at Man City, and I'm not sure they do. But Aguero's a different, you know, case. You know, you put Aguero in that team and it probably makes quite a big difference because the chances will be put away. But as we all know, that's not where the problems are. The problems are A, defence, and B, defensive tactics. And the defensive tactics, they give away far too many goals. They've gotten too many possessions. It's always been the case. And it used to be, it didn't matter because you scored more goals than the opposition. But at the moment, without Aguero, you're not, actually.
And did you detect work rate dropping as well?
Yes. That's a really good point, actually. Very, very noticeable. They did quite a few of the occasions. They tried to do a close, but it was kind of jolt close. And anybody who watched it, I'm sure, spotted Leicester just zip, zip, zipped around them. Nice little one-twos, a la Barcelona. Yeah. Yeah, zip, 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 and they were gone. It's one of the biggest cheats in football. You run in to make a tackle, and everyone thinks you've done a good job. No, you haven't. You run in to make a tackle when it's on. Otherwise, you keep your shape. There were just too many of their players in that midfield area just running in and chasing in shadows with no structure to it. So, yes, it wasn't a sprint in. It was a kind of jog in. Either go in and do it right or else don't. Sit back and be hard to beat. And it's the easiest thing in the world, actually, to make a run forward, knowing that when it's beyond you, you don't need to chase back because you'll never get there. So I think there's definitely nowhere near that work rate, nowhere near that sharpness. And it's not even, you can't even compare it to Liverpool. You're not even close to comparing it to Liverpool.
Yeah, that jumped to mind when initially you came on and said Liverpool work rate has been up tonight. And, you know, that's everything at odds with Man City. And it did seem, and people made the point after the game, that the Leicester midfield in particular seemed to almost grow in confidence as they realised, it was a fake press is maybe the wrong way of putting it. But, you know, like even for the penalty, Mendy had the confidence to kind of beat a player or two and get the move going and beat the press. And once almost Leicester realised they could do it, it was almost open season.
Yeah, it is one of those. You can actually tell on a football field, when somebody makes a run towards you, you can tell if they're at full sprint, if they are a bit tired as they're making the move. So it's almost a sixth sense, you know it. And if there's two or three of you that are young enough and sharp enough and know you've got that, and it's just simple things like not chasing your runner at one-twos, you know, just really, really simple things, and they weren't doing it. You feel that immediately, and it gives, you know, every one of your players a lift. Having said that, go back to what you were talking about, Pep and his demeanour. His demeanour was odd. Laura was right. His demeanour was strange afterwards. Acceptance, not overly gutted by that specific result, you know, and had a kind of almost a lame attempt to mention the penalty kicks that were all given and saying you can't do that, can't give that many away. But it was more than that. You know, it was the fact that they were too easily cut open, and it, some of the times it wasn't even too complicated to do that cutting open. And I think he's a bit gutted, like I am, like everyone else. I'm sure I've not heard the whole show tonight, but I'm sure the word penalty kick has been mentioned more than once tonight, and it's driving everybody mad at the moment, obviously. But one of the things that's driving me mad is not the thing everyone's talking about, but it's the fact that there's two or three naive, or maybe even more than that, naive referees out there who are falling for it hook, line and sinker now when players get in front of a defender and just throw themselves at a defender and fall down.
Yeah,
and they just get a penalty every time.
Yeah, I share that view. I think it's a minority view, actually. I was listening to a few other podcasts, you know, various sides of the pond, and you know, Aaron Connolly, I felt, threw himself to the ground and didn't get a penalty. But I thought that was the right decision. Whereas I do now feel you get in front of your man, chuck yourself to the ground, and referees are giving it. I do agree with that. And I'm not sure what the defender is meant to do when the attacker gets in front of you.
Well, do what Kieran Tierney did tonight against Liverpool, against Salah. Jump out of the way.
Yeah.
If you don't jump out of the way, that's what it looked really bad, didn't it?
I didn't see that one.
Well, Tierney just got out of the way so that Salah had a clear run, had the shot, bounced off him. There was a tap in at the back post. Now, that's how the goal happened, because Tierney realises if someone has got a quarter yard in front of you, if you are in the same vicinity, they'll throw themselves at you and fall down and get a penalty kick. So Tierney spotted that tonight, but they still lost the goal out of it. But there's a lot of players doing it just now. Mopey, particularly, is incredible. Connolly, well spotted with that one. He did it, but the referee didn't get that right. I think he got it wrong, because it wasn't a penalty kick, but it should have been a booking. The referee spots that he's done that, and that's specifically what he's done. You should book him. That's what you're trying to do. Mopey does it. He's a horrendous. He's unbelievable. He's not as much of a genius as Jamie Vardy at it. I mean, Vardy's just world class at it. Every time he does it, he just throws himself in there. And you know what? See if there's no downside, i.e. you're not going to get booked. I know it sounds hard. I'm not even blaming the players now. Because if you know you're not going to get booked, there's no downside to trying it.
Yeah.
That's apart from the madness of the handball just now. That one's, so the amount of penalties you're going to get, so many games now are going to be decided on penalty kicks. It's ridiculous.
Mm. The Jamie Vardy flick, before we move on, I mean, we should just take a moment to genuflect before it.
Oh, wow. it's hard to, you know, it's one of those ones that, again, don't show it in slow motion. It shows what happened, but it doesn't show the real genius of it. To actually consider not kicking the ball, just stamping your foot into an area where it will specifically hit an angle at a rate. I can't remember many in my life that I've seen better than that. Get to the front post and not even deliberately kick to redirect. Just place your foot and allow it and know that that's going to happen. It was utter genius.
Genius, yes. No, you've phrased that perfectly, because we were chatting about it earlier, just myself and the lads at the top of the show, where we just kind of faff around, and none of us are professional footballers. But again, sorry, I'm dissing other shows here, and I don't mean to, but I was listening to the Totally Football podcast, and one of the contributors was saying, geez, you know, you were saying, obviously, it's easier when the ball's rolling along the ground to score in that position. And I was thinking, I'm sure it's not. Like, no, it's the Zola flick or the Lee Sharp flick, they just take the power on the ball and direct it. Like, yeah. I think if that ball's rolling into me along the ground, I try and really, you know, Cruyff boot the ball and fall over, like try and put force on it. I've never seen someone kind of stab it the way you describe, place the foot. And, like, genius is the word.
I mean, it's, something is unusual and different, and thinking so far outside the box, and it was there. I mean, I often talk about the best that I've seen ever, I think, in the front post is Olivier Giroud. I've never seen anybody better at it. Like, he just gets to the front post, he redirects it brilliantly, but he redirects it with a kick. He screws the body, he screws the foot, he uses the power in that way. But using the power, had he done the screwing the foot one there, that's not a goal. The keeper sees that, and also he probably doesn't get it on target. Whereas if you do what he does there, it's possibly the only capable way you've got scoring from there. And it, and the joy is, we all know he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
There was no fluke there. That was what he meant. And it was brilliant. And if the ball, as you say, again, no, I do go on Totally Football now and again. And now if the ball is in the air, you have got the opportunity to redirect with volley.
Mm.
So it's much harder to do it that way, definitely.
Well, I don't even know why we're talking about this anyway, because the game is ruined, as we know. Exhibit A, Jamie Carragher.
It's an absolute disgrace, an absolute joke. Newcastle fans will be ecstatic, I can understand that. But everybody else in this country will say exactly what I'm saying and what I'm thinking. Eric Dyer jumps for the ball, has no control where his arm's going to be. There's a header half a yard away from him, hits him on the back of the arm, has no idea what's going on. This is a joke, whether it's the Premier League, the FA, FIFA, Kalina, whoever's involved in this, stop it, because you're ruining football for everybody.
And then Exhibit B with Nigel Farage nodding approvingly back home, I suspect. Jermaine Genus, over to you.
We're losing our game. We're losing the product of the brilliant Premier League. We're not the Liga.
You think PGMOL should have gone, we're going to stick with how we're implementing handball.
Correct.
Not how you're doing it everywhere
else.
There's
a reason why we're the most watched league. The reason why we're the most lucrative league. There's a reason why it's the most exciting league. You know, it's a fair league. This falling in line with what La Liga do and what Serie A do, it makes no sense at all. For years, Fletch, when we've played in Europe, in Champions League or whatever...
Yeah.
You just adapted your game as a player. You knew you was going to a different environment with referees and so on. This is, it's ridiculous. And it has got to change. And, you know, I'd go as far to say that the players, managers have got to get together and take some form of stance to get the game back.
There we are. Have that Brussels or Neon, whichever. So, but look, I mean, well, you can't argue. And this is not working, to say the least. What's the issue here? How do we solve this?
Right. OK, so it was interesting to hear Jamie saying FIFA, Kalina, whoever it is, right, okay, it is IFAB. There is your problem, and there is the group that you have to get a hold of. Now, if you want to blame the Premier League or the referees or Match Officials Association or anyone you like, you can try that if you like, but IFAB, they make the rules. Now, there are a group of six people involved, the Football Association of Wales, the Scottish Football Association, the FA, FIFA. There's six groups involved, but FIFA have a 50% of the decision-making power, right? Mm. So it must go back to them to some degree. But they've made that change there. Now, they made the change last year, and England, for some obscure reason, have decided to fall in with it. And it's not maybe obscure. I think it was maybe, look, we're not getting this VAR right, so let's simplify it. Well, it has simplified it, right? It's made it rubbish. It's made it rank as in, I don't know one player, I don't know one manager, I don't know one pundit, I don't know one fan who agrees with it. And I don't think I know any referees that would agree with it either, because they don't like it. They're only implementing it. I cannot blame any referees. I can't even blame the people back, you know, in Stockley Park. I can't blame VAR. It's nothing got to do with any of that. IFAB have made the decision and it's been taken on board. So what Janus was saying will come to pass. And I think it will come to pass long before the season's out. I think they'll change it during the season. I think they'll say, no, no, this is silly. This is not working. There were some good stats on it. The amount of handball penalty kicks that you're getting, obviously, you may have them to hand. But in the Serie A and La Liga last season compared to the Premier League. And it's just getting silly. And the daftness of it is, I already know if I was playing, if I didn't get 8-9 penalty kicks a season now, I'd be gutted with myself.
Yeah.
Because I know how to get a player inside a box and flick up towards his arm.
Well, I mean, we were talking earlier, and that could be the natural, horrible conclusion to this whole thing, you know?
Hey, wait a minute. I did it when I played.
Right.
And that's when that rule wasn't in. So you would do it. Of course you would do it. If it's within the rules, you would do it. So it's completely ridiculous. They're absolutely right. It's ruining the game. And to hear, I think, Steve Bruce talking about it, Steve Bruce was saying, "But I got a penalty, but it's a joke."
Yeah,
you know, we are in a mad world when that actually happens. When the manager gets a penalty kick and says, "No, that's an absolute joke." So there is only, I think, you know, IFAB aren't going to change it. So you've got to basically say within the FA and the Premier League, get to an agreement. It's not going to be the players. It's not going to be the managers. They don't make decisions. Mm. It's got to be within the English professional game. They've got to say, right, okay, we're keeping the rules, but we're implementing them slightly differently. And the slightly differently is, it's got to be either deliberate or clearly stopping a goal.
Okay, so they're allowed to keep the rule and change the interpretation of it, and that won't cause a major issue. Yeah, okay. And Jermaine Genius, by the way, was responding to Mark Chapman outlining the different stats from Serie A and the Liga where those penalties are happening more and more. So to be fair, he was set up to make that point. I mean, it's just a perfect storm, isn't it? And VAR now at the moment means that every, you know, flick of a hand against the ball has to be looked at on a giant screen at the side of the pitch. So, you know, there would have been a time where a referee could have seen it, figured that's definitely not deliberate. I don't need to go near that. And
take the word deliberate out. Doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, which is crazy. But isn't that crazy? I mean, I presume you grew up in the world of it was accidental.
Yes, absolutely. And felt perfectly happy with it, as I think most fans did.
Yeah.
The one problem was at the time is, if somebody smashed a ball towards a goal and it was going in and it hit somebody's hand, but it wasn't deliberate, well, we all know that should probably be a goal or a penalty.
Yeah.
We get that, but it wasn't within the rules because it had to be deliberate handball. So they've tried to tweak and tweak and tweak, but you know, what they've finally come to now is possibly, arguably, the worst of all possible worlds. Mm. So well done. That's quite complicated to get the worst of all possible worlds, but that's what they've actually managed to get to. And They need to roll back for the problem is, of course, you get into European football, you're back into those rules again. Sure. You better be ready for it. And the players will be ready for it. And it's kind of sickening, though, because we look at the start of the season and it's been brilliant in lots of ways, hasn't it?
Mm.
You know, millions of goals, lots of exciting, some weird and wonderful decisions. There's been some fabulous goals as well. You've not even mentioned Mahrez's goal, which was a stunner as well. So there's all this going on. There's plenty to talk about. And you get this one thing, which is just a piece of stupidity, ruining it for everyone. So it's upsetting. And I just can't believe that, you know, the English authorities will not say, actually, no, we will change our interpretation that we ask our referees to take.
The interesting question is maybe how long it will take them to do so.
Yeah, and they often want a break, don't they? But there's not going to be a break. You know, there's not even going to be a winter break this season. and they would love to be able to do that. It doesn't always happen like that. I've known it throughout seasons where the referees come in at the start of the season and they give that talking to you and they say, well, this year there's not going to be any pulling in the box, and then for 3 weeks you get penalties, then you never see another one for it because they realise it got a bit stupid and they just sort of quietly adapted it. You know, the word goes around with the referees, it gets subtly put out to them. And I think you can actually do it that way. You can actually start saying, right, we're not actually going to do it in that way, and just slowly change it. For once, there will not be a big hoo-ha about a U-turn. This is the once there certainly will not be. But I've actually watched and been involved in many decisions over the years. You've just changed the attitude slightly or the interpretation slightly as the season's gone on.
Yeah, I was curious as to whether there had been uproar around La Liga or Serie A with this change. Like, I can't think everybody's delighted with it over there.
Well, certainly in the early days, I can remember there was a lot of complaints about it. Right, okay, so we had this conversation, right? And we're having this conversation now. But everyone else has had this conversation, right?
Yeah.
So shall we take it a different direction? This is the future. How about that? Okay, it's not going to change. What about, how do you think the game goes then? It's a different game, isn't it? It actually might be the case. Because there's a lot of things in the game that 25 years ago you'd think, oh, for goodness sake, you'd never accept that. But it's kind of accepted now. And I was thinking about it tonight. You know, you are getting a load more goals. You are getting more penalties. It's a bit ridiculous for our outlook on the game. But it may well be there's people up the top of, particularly IFAB, FIFA, or whatever, saying, yeah, but we're getting lots more goals. Did you see how many more goals they scored last year in the Italian league? It was the most, was it 50 years or whatever, the most goals ever. They would almost argue with you. Actually, it may be working. You know, you're actually getting a lot more goals and adding to excitement. Now, there's many of us that don't want that type of more goals and that type of more excitement. But there's also a lot saying, this is what the kids want to see. They want to see lots and lots of goals. They want to see four, five threes and four penalties and all that. That's maybe the future. There is a possibility in it. You've got to take it into consideration. In 10 years' time, we might get used to this. I hope not. I'm being devil's advocate. But you know that's a possibility.
Sure. Graham Souness tried to make that argument in the midst of the Sky coverage yesterday, and Twitter was in no mood to hear that kind of a point being made in peak emotion after, you know, full time. But he did put that forward. And Lee Dixon, I saw, tweeted that this wouldn't be so horrific if, you know, Men in Black style, we could all just flash a pen and erase all the footballing kind of culture that we've grown up with. You know, like if we were starting from year dot, this might be acceptable. The problem is that we aren't. But as you say, if they persevere with it, if they get together and say, the next 6 months are going to be ropey, Jamie Carragher is going to come at us at least half a dozen more times, we're going to be the talk of Match of the Day, but eventually people will get bored of having that conversation and then we keep it and we have it.
Like they'll get bored of the VAR conversation. Eventually they'll just say, actually, it's part of the game, it's part of the deal, you just need to deal with it.
When are we getting bored of the VAR conversation?
It will stop. Yeah. Just to be accepted after a while. I mean, you do not go back. So you'll get, eventually, you just say, that's part of it, that's part of the deal. Now, seeing as I was somebody who accepted and understood the reasoning for VAR, and if it gets used better, you get more realistic and honest results. The thing is, you don't need to stick garbage rules on top of that. They've just done, which is the problem. Yeah. But it may well be. Now, I hadn't heard that, Lee Dixon, or as you say, Graham, coming away with that argument. But we've been in this game long enough to know that can happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Upsettingly.
What other games caught your eye this weekend then?
Funnily enough, I have to watch the Chelsea games. I cover it for Chelsea TV and stuff like that. And honestly, it was one of the funniest ever. And a strange thing happened, a really odd thing happened. Because I watched a bit of it, there's a kind of app they have at Chelsea. And so you've got people talking about the game at halftime, and then the app's getting all the comments. And honestly, the vitriol, the vicious, offensive hate speak. And I'm thinking, that's on the official Chelsea banner. Really? Is that the world we're in now, where on your official club line you actually go and scroll all this F you, Frank Lampard, etc. You're thinking, do you guys not remember that guy? And I was, even though it was very frustrating to be a Chelsea fan and it wasn't very good and they looked sluggish and they're 3-0 down, I was that was kind of away from the game. That was, I found that quite amazing. I'm now wanting to check Man United TV, I want to check Arsenal TV, see if they're all, you can basically go on your clubs. And I have nothing wrong with opinion. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with it. Say it and scroll it all day long. Not hate speech. Not swearing and cursing and abusive to that level. Anyway, the Chelsea one was really, really an intriguing game. And it's one of those ones where you look at it, you're 3-0 down. And it jumped back in my head. I remember playing a game once for Chelsea against QPR. And we played quite well. We lost 6-0, but we played all right. And it can happen. Now and again, a wild thing like that happens. Every time a team you play against gets you, every mistake you make, they score. Every time they get a chance, they score. And you look around going, yeah, but we've had 25 shots on target. Mm. It was one of those ones you're almost like, it was an incredible thing to watch. And it's one of those things just now where a lot of teams are just, they're just playing for that one stroke two, maximum three chances a game. And it's enough for them. Mm. And those teams are, I'm actually quite impressed with them at the moment, because the top teams are so busy spending the entire time with everybody attacking and forgetting about defending. It's the ebb and flow of football and tactics and the way it goes. If one system goes too far one way, something else will come out and help, you know, recalibrate it. And I think there's quite a bit of that going on just now.
We have the US election debate tomorrow, and as you well know, I'm sure, so much of that is about managing expectation. And frankly, if Joe Biden doesn't completely forget where he's going in a sentence, that'll be deemed probably a success. The Democrats are managing expectation. So Lampard has gone from bereft of Hazard and, you know, just left with a few kids and not much else to 200 million spent, and maybe we could challenge for the title. And perhaps that explains the vitriol, the frustration. He's got a completely different set of circumstances this year.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any real complaint about that. You know, the expectations are higher, and they should be higher because that amount of money spent, he's been backed a huge amount. But it doesn't happen right away. I mean, some teams, you know, you put them together and they just click, you know, and it's fantastic to see. It's actually quite rare as well. How long did it take Man City before they finally began to be a team? You know, it took Pep a wee while to really get them going to look like the team that they were for a couple of years. Liverpool, you know, how long has it taken them to be as dominant as now? They put that team together, but they had to learn to work with each other. And, you know, Chelsea should be no different at all. They should certainly, without a doubt, they should be top six, yeah, at least, and probably ought to be top four, just by the fact that the quality of the players they've brought in. But you watch, Havertz and Werner will score goals and they will do well. No doubt about that. But you watch Werner, and I don't know how much you've watched of him.
Very little.
Everybody I've talked to, and the bits I've seen him before, he's got this kind of this mythical status. He's maybe the quickest player in the Premier League now, because he did 100 metres and had a 10.9 or something stupid, right? And you watch him just now and you're thinking, well, you don't look as if you could run it in 21.9, mate. There's no speed there, you know. But that's not disappeared forever. That'll come back. So you need to wait. That sort of stuff you need to wait for. But at the moment, with Frank, yeah, he'll get pointed at. Will he be concerned? They will be concerned. Do I think Chelsea are are flatlining at the moment and going to have a nightmare season? No chance. Far too many good players there.
Okay.
I think they'll be okay.
And will they keep on conceding goals? I mean, you mentioned Liverpool. A Van Dijk strolling in the door certainly helps things fairly immediately. And an Alisson, you know, in Chelsea's case as well. I know they've signed a keeper. If they could sort out that, they'd be off to a hell of a start.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, Thiago Silva is, you know, his mistake that he made for the goal was just ridiculous. I mean, like, utter schoolboy stuff. And then you watch the rest of the game. If you go and deconstruct the rest of his game, he was dominating the play and the passing. He's unbelievably comfortable in the ball. He was reading it really well.
Right.
And of course, that one aberration, people are going, oh, well, he's an old man and he looked terrible. He didn't, actually. He looked really, really well for a good period of the game. So when he's up to speed, and he doesn't even need to be like 100 mile an hour because he won't be at that age, but his reading of the game and his comfort on the ball, I mean, he's one of the great centre-backs of the generation, absolutely. So he'll definitely help them. But again, it's very early days for all those people, and they're looking a bit ridiculous at the moment because everyone's expecting them to be hitting the ground at full speed. And Havertz isn't, Timo Werner isn't, you know, Thiago Silva clearly isn't, Ziyech hasn't even played yet. You just look at a whole bunch of their players, and you know, Chilwell's played half a game in the Carabao Cup, I think, or a game in the Carabao Cup. So they've got all these players in. Why have they not? Well, half of them haven't played yet, and the other half aren't fit yet. Don't judge them too quickly.
Okay, fair point. Good luck trying to tell that to all the vitriol on the app, by the way. It's far too nuanced. There's no room for that. No room for that.
I'll just keep being nuanced. Don't worry. I'll do that.
Pat and Evan, thanks a million. We'll talk to you next week. Cheers.
Pleasure. See you soon.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now, welcome back. 82 minutes on the clock. At Anfield, no real change over the last half hour or so. Let's go over to Shane Pennington.
It's Liverpool 2, Arsenal 1. Despite dominating the second half, Liverpool haven't found that killer third goal here, and they've just got to be wary that Arsenal still could get a way back into this game. Mane's fired over from 18 yards out. Van Dijk's been denied by Leno from distance, and Sadio Mane, with a neat little turn and shot, found his effort just go wide at the left-hand post. But for all their dominance, Liverpool, Arsenal just had a chance in which they could have equalised when Lacazette was denied by Alisson when he was played through one-on-one, and he avoided the offside trap. So Liverpool looking for the third goal here, and they're just about to bring on both James Milner and Diego Jota for his home debut. It's Liverpool 2, Arsenal 1.
Speaking of Diego Jota, I think we've all had a soft spot for Wolves over the last while, not least because of Matt Doherty, but they've made a really terrible start to the season. They've lost 3 of 4 games. Admittedly, one was in the Carabao Cup and one was against Man City, but 4-0, hammered by West Ham last night. And it was by a distance the worst performance we've seen from Wolves under Nuno and in the Premier League era of late. To discuss, we have Jackie Oatley with us, who presents the Molyneux View podcast, amongst other things. We spoke to her a little before coming on air, and I put it to her that I don't think, as bad as the start has been, we're quite at the fire up the crisis klaxon stage.
No, it can't be, can it? It really can't be, because they won the opening game of the season. Everything was hunky-dory, seemingly. They'd had the shortest pre-season in history, I think. A lot of the players arriving back, 9 of them, on the Thursday before the Monday night opening game of the season. So little time to prepare. But since then, they have lost all 3 games. So against Stoke in the League Cup at home, with virtually all the stars out on the pitch. Against Man City, no showman losing to Man City. But my goodness, that first half, they were all over the shop. Nothing like the Wolves we've come to respect. And then against West Ham United, what on earth was that all about? And we recorded an hour-long podcast going into all the details, which I'm quite sure you don't have time for today. But it's easily the worst performance under Nuno. It's easily the worst defeat under Nuno. And yes, it is very worrying. So he has a full week now on the training pitch to try and put things right before Fulham at home next Sunday.
So what are the headline issues, bad pre-season aside?
Yeah, so the issues are they have recruited, of course, but they've lost Matt Doherty. Well, Nuno is adamant he hasn't lost him, but as in they sold him. It's his decision. They wanted to upgrade him, in inverted commas, and they brought in Nelson Semedo, who made his debut against West Ham. He's going to need more than a couple of training sessions to fit into the Nuno way of doing things. Johnny, of course, is out with an ACL, and their wing-backs are absolutely key as to how they play. So they have the 3 at the back, but Saïss, even Cody and Willy Bolly, normally so tight defensively, were so exposed. And I think one of the big problems was the fact they had both Neves and Moutinho in the centre of the field, which, not being wise after the event, but looking at the team sheet before Man City at home and West Ham away, I remember thinking they need Dendonka in there for the physicality, for the legs, the ability to burst forward from midfield. Neves and Moutinho in particular, I mean, he scored 1 goal in 108 games or so. I mean, he's not a goal scorer. His passing was sideways. Neves' passing was sideways. They're not physical. They're too similar. Moutinho's just turned 34. He's played a lot of football. And the front three, Adama Traore worked his socks off on the right. Neto worked his socks off. as did Raul in the centre. But the usual interchanging of passing that we've come used to from Wolves just wasn't there. And both the first two goals came from Raul trying to create something up front, running into trouble. West Ham deserve a huge amount of credit. They're extremely organised. But they broke on the counter-attack and were 2-0 up. And when Haller scored the fourth with the easiest header in the world, completely unmarked, he didn't even celebrate. It was like shelling peas. It was just bizarre against a team that's supposed to be in crisis because they haven't added to their squad.
Yeah. And I have heard from pretty reliable sources that Nuno traditionally works this team hard. You know, there are very, very few, next to no days off. And so maybe when there's a drop off in fitness, it affects their performance, especially dramatically. I am curious, you know, so he's been there, what, 3 years? This is the third year and he signed a new 3-year extension. I did wonder last year as they were on off the back of another very good Premier League season and they were into the latter stages of the Europa League. It did cross my mind. Is this as good as it can get for Nuno? You know, I wouldn't. So clearly he doesn't think so, and he's very happy there. But, you know, Wolves are in that tricky position where they've done so well and it's all gone so brilliantly that there's a ceiling approaching.
Well, he would absolutely refute that on the basis that he's looking to climb even higher. And they're in a key transitional phase at the moment, because if you've seen much of Wolves, and it sounds like you have, then you'll know that they're very much a counter-attacking style of play. And they've been absolutely... they've torn teams apart in the way that they counterattack. And it's been absolutely thrilling to watch at times, which has been brilliant for a newly promoted side, as they were two seasons ago and finishing seventh twice. But they're trying to evolve the style of play. And to do that, he wants players who are more comfortable in possession and not just rapid on the counter. So he was happy to let Jota go to Liverpool. He really was. It wasn't a case of losing one of the best players. He was happy. £45 million for Jota. Wow, that is a lot of money. But good luck to him. And he signed an 18-year-old. He signed two 18-year-olds, one from Liverpool and one another Portuguese striker in Fabio Silva. So they really are ones for the future. And you would think in 4 or 5 years' time, this could be an outstanding side. But with Fosun having the money they have, the ambition they have, they are an investment firm. They want to see a return on that investment. They're saying it doesn't all have to be done today. Mm. But of course, whilst maybe a mid-table side season and perhaps a cup would definitely be seen as progress, they're not prepared to just let this season slide and to be hovering around relegation. I think it's not panic stations yet.
Sure.
It's a case of, it was a horror show, an absolute horror show from back to front, from start to finish, apart from the goalkeeper. And they've got a week to work on it for Fulham at home. But no, they are absolutely aiming to climb back into the European places and not let the season slide. But it's that transition. Mm. And Nuno really has to sort out the midfield. It's absolutely key to this, so that they don't leave the likes of Mikel Antonio one-on-one with Connor Cody. That's not been happening. That is not how they play. And they can't leave themselves so vulnerable again.
That's an interesting point you made there about the possession, or the move towards more of a possession game, because against Sevilla, that's what jumped out, you know, crucially, and they looked wrecked in that match as well. But if you're looking at that maybe as a litmus test of where they are, they couldn't keep the ball very much in that game.
Yeah, and it is difficult to tell, isn't it? I mean, they played so many games. Was it 59 games that season? They played so much football and they just looked completely spent in the Olympiacos game before that. And so we didn't expect much from them. But my goodness, did Sevilla teach them a lesson. So we thought, OK, maybe it's just so much football this season. They're not in Europe. They are out of the League Cup. So they had a full week to prepare for the West Ham game, which West Ham didn't, by the way. They had a League Cup game in the week. So, yeah, they were miles off Sevilla, absolutely miles off them. But you do have to point, and it's not a case of finding excuses. You're trying to find reasons here, because Nuno has always met these challenges head on. And we've never seen them play like this before. And you do wonder whether the fact that they just didn't really have a pre-season. You know, West Ham had 3 weeks off, 4 weeks on the training ground. Wolves players had barely a couple of weeks off, straight into internationals and back on the Thursday, straight into a match on Monday. That's not time to prepare for a new season or mentally rest. And of course, virtually all of them are from abroad. Nuno's spoken about his stress, his anxiety at the moment, about the coronavirus restrictions, the fact that he can't see his family. He did seem very stressed to me when I watched his pre-match press conference on Friday. He did not seem a happy bunny. And I just wonder whether some of it's getting to him a little bit.
Yes, I think some of the colour has gone out of lots of lives, hasn't it? And that would extend to Nuno, who must, I mean, has so much credit in the bank. I mean, we're kind of jumping the gun here in every respect by even talking about it. Even it's no more than a wobble and probably explainable via the pre-season situation. But Nuno as a personality, he has been such a welcome addition to the Premier League over the last number of years. Incredibly charismatic, incredibly likeable, and even when things go against him, manages to maintain a degree of dignity amidst the whole thing.
Yeah, and he's the sort of manager which, if you've had an absolute howler of a refereeing decision against him, he just won't talk about it. Mm. He will just say, don't ask me about that. Whereas behind the scenes, you know, he's absolutely fuming. Think Burnley away and Doherty's handball, for example. Wouldn't talk about it. So he is a good character. He instills this sense of camaraderie amongst his squad, which is so intense. He's known to be the most intense manager around, and I've spoken to some of his staff members who can absolutely vouch for that, so don't worry about that. He demands the highest standards from those people working with him and for him. But in terms of his players, they absolutely idolise him. Think of the players that he's persuaded to come from Champions League football to Championship football with the likes of Neves and Jota as well. And they have grown, they have improved under him. Adama Traore, you remember him at Middlesbrough, no end product. He has completely transformed him, and the players really do love him. Media-wise, he's fine, but it's not his favourite thing to do. But he is very much loved. So, I mean, there's no talk of it, you know, them falling off the rails at the moment. There's absolutely none of that. But that first half against Man City and the 90 minutes against West Ham, alarm bells will definitely be ringing, but for Nuno, not for their bosses, I would say.
Yeah, look, it's the Matt Doherty effect. I mean, we could have told you that weeks ago. This was coming.
I watched him in his game earlier on in the day for Tottenham, and I just sat there thinking, oh, Matt, how Wolves miss this? You know, yeah. The 1-2s, the cutting inside. But they're so used to that. And we're used to seeing Connor Cody pinging those diagonal balls straight onto the chest of Doherty and keeping the ball in play and then the 1-2s. But there's none of that. It was Semedo's first game. There was one diagonal to Adama Traore and that was it. So they need to sort it all out. They need to sort it out.
He does love an underlap, Matt Doherty, doesn't he? He loves coming in field. We even saw it for Ireland. He started ahead of Seamus Coleman recently. And, you know, traditionally it's chalk on your boots and get down the line. Matt Doherty loves coming inside and it can cause havoc.
He's so good at it. He is. I've watched so many of his games in the last few seasons. I mean, he was there a decade, remember?
Yeah.
And it just wasn't really seen as first team material, really, for quite some time, until Dean Saunders actually came in and gave him his chance in League One, just before they got relegated to League One. And the way that player has grown has been absolutely wonderful to watch. It really has. I mean, his fitness levels, as you'll probably be aware, didn't used to be tip-top, but that's something that Nuno and his backroom staff have absolutely sorted out. One of his former teammates told me how he used to love drinking loads of orange juice and he thought he was being really healthy, but he had to learn about the nutritional side of things and realise that actually way too much orange juice is actually way too much sugar. And so he had to learn all that under Nuno and the team. And he really made the most of himself physically and the way he developed. And he's turned into a top-class player. And a lot of Wolves fans are absolutely devastated to see him go. Wish him well, though, and they just hope that this new guy, Semedo, can kick on from the glimpses he showed at Barcelona and become that really top-level right wing back.
Jackie, before you go, you touched on the ownership model there. You might just elaborate on that and the Mendes influence at the club. Is that still very much alive and well? Is he still the agent pulling the vast majority of the strings at Wolves?
He is. He's the facilitator. He's not a director of football. He's not employed by the club. There are quite a few misconceptions about his role there, but he is very much, he has the ear of the chairman, Jeff Shee, of course he does. They're in business together. But there is a very, very experienced recruitment team who a lot of people are thinking, well, what's the point of having a recruitment team, a really good, extensive recruitment team, if all the signings are George Mendes signings? Well, the point is that the recruitment team have a vast database of players who they have been watching all day, every day. They sit and watch and watch and watch and watch games, some of them in person and some of them watch them nonstop throughout the day. And they scout these players and they have records on these players. So when, for example, Fabio Silva becomes available becomes available, was thought not to be, had a 130 odd million euro release clause, but Porto really needed the money. So when he became available, it was a case of George Mendes saying, look, this guy's available, do you want to take him? And it wasn't a case of a chairman going, oh, he sounds good, well, do you think he's any good? Okay, we'll sign him. No, 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 the recruitment team have this extensive database and they say, we have been watching him in person for 2 years since he was a 16-year-old kid and we know exactly what he's all about. Sign him straight away if you've got the chance. So really, they do work in tandem, but Mendes is the facilitator. Yes, all the deals this summer have been Mendes clients. So you look at that and think, oh, yeah. But of course, he works for several other clubs as well. It's not as though he's on the payroll and it's not as though he's just at Wolves. He facilitates and oils the wheels of a lot of deals between clubs around Europe and the world.
Yeah, there's no avoiding him, really. I mean, if you want to buy anyone at this stage. Jackie Oatley from the Molyneux View, amongst other things. Thanks so much, Jackie.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now, welcome back. It has gone full time at Anfield, and Diogo Jota, who we were just talking about, scored a third for Liverpool in the 88th minute. So, a 3-1 win, it's gone full time. Big fist pump from Jurgen Klopp. Very happy with that win. Lacazette put Arsenal 1-0 up on 25 minutes. Mane equalised 1-1. Andy Robertson really well worked, really good goal to make it 2-1. And Jota then 3-1 on 88 minutes. Liverpool, really, it would have been a travesty if they'd not taken the 3 points. They were utterly dominant. And Aston Villa 3-0 winners against Fulham in the early kickoff. That is pretty much us done for the evening. You can download all of tonight's show, including Ronan O'Gara, who was with us for Monday Night Rugby. Tomorrow, OTBAM coming at you in all the usual places. The lads will be talking to Tyrone MMA star James Gallagher, amongst other things. And then we're busy tomorrow. We'll have Ryan Farmer-Jones on the NBA Finals. And then we'll be looking into a scandal, really, which has engulfed horse racing in the US, doping in particular. It's blown up there. The FBI are involved. It's all kicking off. So that and more on the way on tomorrow night's show. Simon Zeebo is going to be with us on Wednesday. In the meantime, Tom Dunn on the way.
With guilt like your eyes. Ra-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-